All right, verse 1, that Jacob flees from Laban. Verse 1, now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has acquired all this wealth. So Jacob overhears Laban's, what? No, his sons, right? It's Laban's sons that are talking. And there's two things that they say. One is, Jacob is taken, how do they say it? Away all this that was our father's. And the second one says, he has acquired this from all that was our father's. You didn't build that. It's another way to say that. Okay, what's the criteria? Spotted, speckled, all striped, you know, stuff like that. And that was the deal. Okay, so again, there was no methods as to how. It was just the end result was the deal. And there was no stipulation as to how. Jacob overhears Laban's sons, and it's not sounding good. Because it sounded like, you know what? The terms that he's taken this from my father, and he's acquired this from what used to be our father's stuff. You know, it really is our dad's kind of idea. Why would the sons care?
He's taken away from them.
Yeah, that's their inheritance, right? Verse number two, and Jacob saw the countenance of Laban. And indeed, it was not favorable toward him as before. So Jacob sees Laban's changed view. What did Laban think of Jacob before? Hey, stick around. God has blessed me because of you. And now, Laban looks at Jacob's flock, huge. Laban looks at his own flock, tiny. And it appears that even though he's tried to manipulate it over time, whatever was changed ultimately was God blessing Jacob, because, as you'll see in a little bit, that Laban kept changing the criteria. So it really wasn't Jacob on the bottom line, it was Laban. And God blessed Jacob no matter what happened. Okay?
Sons. If I keep the daughters, I keep my son-in-law. He's being blessed. My sons, I can put them out the pasture, basically. And
I don't think so. And this is why. It's a good theory, but one, he put all his flock, when they separated, remember, they put him with Laban's sons. So he trusted his sons. Also, you'll see in a little bit that his daughters had a very low view of Laban, because they felt like pawns. Okay, he sold us. Everything you did for you, not for us, bottom line. Okay, so we'll see that in a little bit. Verse number 3, the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you. The Lord tells Jacob to return home. I just call it home. Makes it easier. Why is verse 2 there and verse 1 there before verse 3 happens? Speculation, I understand. Why didn't motivation. God just speak up?
Motivation. Natural motivation just to get out of there.
He gave Jacob some dissatisfaction or reason to leave, right? Hey, things are going well. Why would I leave? Things are not going well. Now, that doesn't mean if things are going bad, it's time to leave. God audibly talked to Jacob. And by the way, things weren't going too well for Jesus on the cross, and he stayed. All right, so a lot of times people try to discern God's will through circumstances. Very poor idea. Okay. But here, God seemed to give him motivation, as Pastor Jim says, a reason to not want to stay. Laban's sons and their dissatisfaction and Laban's view of him has plummeted. Okay, in the Laban polls. Okay, so return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you. Okay, return, and I will be with you. Remember, way back when God first appeared to Jacob, it was on his way there, and God said, I will be with you. So God is repeating this. God doesn't seem to show up much. I think it's 20 years later. Right? He's not talking to God every week on a two-way basis. He's not, you know, they're not on, God's not talking to him all the time. Jacob is kind of having to figure stuff out on his own until 20 years is up. And then God says, you know what? Time to go back home. And by the way, that's what he had said Jacob eventually would be doing. So it's not unexpected. The next one here is kind of extended. It's verses 4 through 13, and I combined all these. You might want to write some stuff down on the right-hand side. But Jacob tells Rachel and Leah. Jacob tells his two wives. It's funny he doesn't tell Zilpah and Bilhah, but because they're kind of property wives. I don't know. And I'm not saying that's right. I mean, that's what they were. They didn't really count. They were handmaidens, and they remained that, even though they bore Jacob children. Verse 4, so Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field to his flock. Maybe out of the way place? Maybe Jacob couldn't get away. That's what he does. Come and visit me at the office. And said to them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not favorable toward me as before. He first says that. Doesn't mention the brothers at all. But the brothers would definitely have been in that same attitude. And he says, but the God of my father has been with me. Your father is not looking too good toward me, but my God has spoken to me again, is the idea, okay? And you know that with all my might I have served my father. I don't think Jacob is selling anything here. Sorry. And you know that with all my might, I have served your father. So let's just label these. What do we want to call them? I'll just call them Jacob's points. Okay. I could call them criteria, but characteristics or whatever. He starts making a list that here's my resume of why. And the logic there is God has been with me. He doesn't really tell them. It doesn't sound like he explained to them what God had said. But the God of my father has been with me. I guess he's not talking about God talking to him. He's talking about God have been with him all along. Okay? In verse 5. Okay, so let's just go down the list here. He says, Laban, not good. Number two, God has been with me. God hasn't given up on me. Three, I'm going to call this effort. It isn't because I haven't tried. I have all of my might. All of my might. I have served your father. He wasn't being lazy and all that. And now's not the time to misrepresent, right? They would have known this for 20 years. What's verse 4 or 7 say, rather? Two things. Laban was trying to manipulate the outcome, changed my wages how many times? 10 times. God did not allow him to hurt me. That seems to have been a real possibility. Now, hurt me, is it physical? Or possibly the outcome of this wages being changed 10 times, economical or financial? Okay, that's what it kind of seems to imply here. Because look, if he said, and he goes on to explain, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said, thus the streaked shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked. It sounds like Laban was changing the deal all along, 10 times. Different times he's changed it, then all the flocks bore streaked. So God, and he attributes this to God, God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. Ultimately, God did this, right? Verse 9. And it happened at the time when the flocks conceived that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were streaked, speckled, and gray spotted. So that's how God handled it. The ones that were basically, God handled the conception of the animals. Then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, Jacob, and I said, here I am. And he said, lift up your eyes now and see all the rams that leap on the flocks are streaked, speckled, and gray spotted. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. So God responded to Laban's deceit here. And he says, I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land, and return to the land of your family. So that's where he says, God did this, and God said, go. All right? So all of that is there. Questions or comments? Number 14, then Rachel and Leah, or verse 14, Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Now, what do they say? Nothing for us here. Are we not considered strangers by him? There's that relationship that he has with his daughters. He doesn't. He acts like he doesn't even know us. For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money. Everything that he got from us didn't return to us in any way, shape, or form. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. We concur. We agree. So Rachel and Leah, and I just put the word respond is all. They agree. He's taken from us. He's ignored us. And this is really our money anyway. Verse 17, then Jacob rose and set his sons and wives and camels. Remember, he had gotten a lot of camels and stuff by then. Even though he was raising goats and sheep, he got very prosperous in the process. So Jacob packs and heads toward home. Now's the time. He's not waiting around. There's no delay at all. Verse 18, and he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep. There's convenience there, right? He's out of the way. And Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. That'll come up later. Now Laban doesn't sound like he's fully monotheistic, is he? You know, he's not one God type of person. And Jacob stole away, unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed the river and headed toward the mountains of Gilead. So he's heading back to the promised land. Where was Laban? And probably where Laban's sons were also. Okay? So the timing was right. Remember, Laban lived 3 days' journey away. Right? And I don't know where the shearing of sheep, but it obviously was very tedious and very occupying. And so he wasn't paying attention. Notice when he found out, verse 22, and Laban was told on the third day that Jacob fled. Was he 3 days away at the time? I don't know. But it was 3 days before Laban found out. Then he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey. So Jacob was still beaten feet, right? So he was 3 days away when Laban found out, and I don't know how far Laban was away from him anyway. So it took him 7 days to catch up, and he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. So Jacob was in the mountains of Gilead by then. But God had come to Laban, the Syrian, in a dream. Now, this is important. But God, you might want to underline that. That occurs quite a bit in the Bible. Man has plans, but God has plans, right? But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, "Be careful what you speak to Jacob, neither good nor bad." You're not trying to persuade him or dissuade him at all. So Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. So they just kind of pull up to him and park as well. Okay, so Laban finds out and pursues. And finds him. And pitches his tent next to Jacob. Okay, nearby anyway. Now the bottom section here, verse 26, and Laban said to Jacob, and he asked him, let's see, how many questions? At least 3 questions. What have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with the sword? Notice his emphasis. Jacob was not, I don't think, inaccurate in his assessment of Laban. Laban still counted everything that Jacob had as his own. And he brings that up again, by the way. Question number 2, why did you flee away secretly? What have you done now? Why did you do it? And steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away, might is the key word here, have sent you away with joy and songs with timbrel and harp. We could have had a going away party for you. We might have. Okay, and again, as long as you can trust Laban, you can take that with all the weight that it carries, okay? And you did not allow me to kiss my sons, who would those be? Grandsons, right? And my daughters or granddaughters, I don't know. Now have you done foolishly in so doing? You left. Now notice, here's Laban. It is in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. So Laban does refer to Jacob, and as far as we know, that's the only time God ever called Jacob's or Laban's number. Ever. Okay? He's been told what God had said, but God never talked to him directly. It's funny, but Laban said, I can hurt you, but God says, don't. Okay? Like, what is that, some kind of dig? Because Laban seemed to take it as for face value that if he tried to do something, Laban's days would be extremely cut short. Okay, and then he says in verse 30, "And now you have surely gone because you greatly longed for your father's house, but why did you steal my gods?" So he gives Jacob the benefit of the doubt. Jacob had asked that 6 years ago, that I want to go back home to my father's house. Okay, I understand that's still an issue, but why did you steal my gods? You know, you've added insult to injury here. So, Laban confronts Jacob. What have you done? Why have you done it? And why have you stolen my gods? Interestingly enough. And this is news to Jacob, yes? The gods part? Okay. So he's still tentative here. There's just some tentativeness to Jacob. Then Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid, for I said, perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force." Remember, Laban just said, "I could hurt you if I wanted to." And Jacob had said, God did not allow Laban to hurt him through all of the wealth change that took place and the blessing that came upon Jacob throughout his time there. And then he goes on to say, "With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live." It sounds like Jacob takes it at face value. Somebody stole Laban's gods. Okay. Kill him then. If you find him, kill him. "In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have of yours and take it with you." Whatever, you go ahead, now's your chance. Whatever you say, I stole from you. Now's your chance to take it back. And again, there's nothing there. Okay. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen the gods, the idols. Okay. So Jacob answers Laban. By the way, it sounds like someone stole, look, and he basically gives him a warrant to search everywhere and everything. Hey, go for it. It's kind of nice, I think, from Jacob's vantage point to hear that God had talked to Laban a little bit. You know, that helped him a little bit here, okay? So it's like, hey, you know, I don't do the God thing. I don't steal from you. Look now and kill whoever stole your gods. Fine by me. And by the way, Laban doesn't hesitate to look. Laban searches Jacob's tents. Isn't that interesting? I mean, neither of them trust each other. And Laban's gods are gone, his idols. Okay? So it's not necessarily unfounded. So Laban went into Jacob's tent, into Leah's tent, and into the two maids' tents. They're the ones that would have had any probably authority or right to even be by the idols. But he did not find them. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. Who stole them? Rachel did. We've heard that twice so far. Now Rachel had taken the household gods. There's number three. Put them in the camel's saddle. They must then have been super big. I think they're called terrapin. Something like that. Household gods, anyway. Put them in the camel's saddle and sat on them. And Laban searched all about the tent but did not find them. So she put them in the little camel's, put them in the camel's saddle and sat on them. Sat on the saddle. And she said to her father, "Let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is with me." It's her time of the month. And he searched but did not find the household idols. Rachel lied and deceived. And it worked. Again, that's not God authorizing lying or deceit. What would have God preferred? Not stealing them in the first place probably would. By the way, if you understand the way the teraphim are viewed, these household gods, That's your avenue of blessing. If you're an idolater, that's how you get blessed. Okay, so Rachel must think that, well, this will the last straw. Maybe she's trying to just hurt her father, or maybe she thinks they actually will bring her blessing.
Or she is getting paid back for her father stealing from her because they could very well be gold,
yeah,
or silver, some precious metal.
Right, that's what I'm saying, getting back at her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe there's intrinsic value just of the things. Good point. Oh, so there's inheritance rights in the potentially. Okay, they could possibly get, she might have thought she was getting the rights of Laban's household inheritance rights for Jacob. That wouldn't have worked out well. She wouldn't have seen it if she would have been discovered, right? It was wrong for her to take them. It was wrong for Laban to have idols, but that's not the issue presented here. They weren't hers to take. Okay, verse 36. Now this, I'll put up first here. Now, Laban finds nothing. Now, Jacob picks up on this, and he now cuts loose on Laban. He kind of tells him, now that there's no evidence of these gods, right, found, then Jacob, based upon no discovery of wrongdoing and, which was actually inaccurate because Rachel had stolen him, but also the fact that God had spoken on Jacob's behalf, that Jacob decides to talk to Laban and actually rebuke him. He lays the list out and says, you have wronged me in these ways. Okay? Then Jacob was angry and rebuked, because I think he expected them to find something. And they should have, right? But he was angry and rebuked, false accusation, really to Jacob, probably toward Jacob probably more than anyone. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? You know, why have you chased me like a criminal? Although you have searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? And, Laban found nothing. Set it here before my brethren and your brethren that they may judge between us both. I'm calling everyone here into witness, including sons that would have been upwards of 20 years old at the time, right? His oldest sons, and also Laban's family that came with him. Verse 38, these 20 years I have been with you. So there's an amount of time. Remember we said 7 and 7, and then 6, 20 years. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes, why would you distrust me? Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young. So I really took care of your flock. I didn't draw a paycheck, so to speak. And I have not eaten the rams of your flock. I didn't eat even probably what was due him, but he did not eat the rams, probably what was worth the most or the best tasting even, I don't know. That which was torn by beasts I did not bring to you. So I absorbed all of the loss too. So if something was killed, I absorbed the loss. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. So if something was stolen or destroyed, you made me pay for it. There I was in the day, the drought consumed me, frost by night, and my sleep departed me. So it was hot, I was there. It was freezing cold. I was there. And I lost all kinds of sleep on your behalf. Thus, I've been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock. And you have changed my wages 10 times. So Jacob is not stretching the truth. He would not have said this to Jacob 10 times. Or I mean, to Laban 10 times. Unless it was true either. Because Laban said, well, it was actually 8. Right? Verse 42, unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away, what? Empty-handed. If Jacob knew Laban and he knew that Laban would have taken everything from him, his kids, his wives, his flocks, and sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands, and rebuked you last night. So ultimately, Jacob rebukes Laban on the basis of what God had done in his life. And the only way Laban would have known is that Laban said it himself. That he says, don't say good or bad. Because what is, it is what it is, and I made it what it is basically what God is saying. Okay? So Jacob basically confronts his father-in-law, probably in a way that wasn't culturally acceptable all the time, right? Because he asked Laban to leave 6 years ago. So there was that much difference there as far as the, you know, respect and authority of the household and all that. So Jacob rebukes Laban. And the basis, bottom line basis, was God. All right? God did this. Verse 43. And Laban answered and said to Jacob, these daughters are my daughters. It's kind of, you want to smack him at this point. Right? These daughters are my daughters. And these children are my children. And this flock is my flock. And all that you see is mine. So Jacob is not far off, is he? Because Laban claims everything still. I'm not sure why God didn't just strike him down there. But I think he knew what Laban was going to say in addition, right? But what can I do this day to these my daughters and to their children whom they have born? He basically says, well, I'm not going to hurt you because they're my people. And you happen to be part of them. Okay? So it's lame. Laban claims everything and he says, kind of inferring that I could hurt you, but I'm not gonna. But I think we understand that there's a little more to it than Laban's generosity. Okay? Laban believes what God had told him. And there was an inherent threat there. That God said it. And that's all he said was neither say good nor bad, period. The inference is God would hurt him, right? Or kill him. So it's interesting. Now the generosity of Laban comes out because he has no choice but to be generous. Now therefore, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. So now, it's interesting, but Laban offers a covenant. Again, he has really no choice because he can't take. Now, that was probably his intent. He was going to take back everything, right? Until God spoke up on Jacob's behalf. So, what is Laban going to do? Watch out for Laban, of course. Okay, that's consistent with Laban. All right, so I can't take all this back, so what's next? Cover my back. Okay, so he makes a covenant. Let's make a covenant between you and me. Okay, now that God's on your side, let's do a little negotiating here. Let's make an agreement. What's the basis of the agreement? Jacob kind of lays the law down with Laban here. But Jacob and Laban make a covenant. So both 13 and 14 are the word covenant. And here's the process of the covenant. So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar, kind of as a reminder again. Then Jacob said to his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there on the heap. So they made this huge heap of stones, and they ate on top of the stones. Kind of like confirming the heap with a meal kind of thing, that it's more than just a pile of rocks. Laban called it Jager Sahathdutha. Does anyone have a translation in their Bible? Yeah. What's it say?
For
Laban's. Heap of witnesses. Okay, so he just says it in his language. Okay. Okay. Well, Laban would have been Syrian or something. Chaldean. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Or Babylonian, I suppose you could call it. And Jacob called it Galid. What is the same thing? Okay. So it's a heap of remembrance, he said?
Witness,
okay. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between you and me this day. So Jacob initiated the pile. Laban named the pile. Jacob named the pile in his own language. And also Mizpah, therefore its name is called Galid. And also Mizpah. Now this is interesting because Christians are goofy. People have made money off of Christians for many years because they'll buy Mizpah coins. Have you ever seen them? And it's like, it's a one coin and it's got a split in the middle. And it quotes this passage. It's, may the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent from one another. And it's like, oh, that is so sweet. And it's like, if you understand the context, it's like, may we not hurt each other. That, you know, that's kind of, may the Lord watch, guard you so that you don't hurt me, and guard me so I don't hurt you. That's the context. But people have been buying it as a love thing for years and years. I remember seeing those up at camp when I was in junior high. Oh, that's so sweet. But it's not sweet at all, actually. Well, yeah, I think it's more of a Laban thing, but... So notice, this is what Laban says. May the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent from one another. And the idea of guard, okay, guard us from each other. If you afflict my daughters, or if you take other wives beside my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. Oh, now he brings up God. That's nice. After he's worried about his idols. Then Laban said to Jacob, here is this heap and here is this pillar which I have placed between you and me. Seems like Jacob built the pillar, but this heap is a witness and this pillar is a witness that I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you will not pass this heap beyond this heap and this pillar to me. For what reason? This is the key. It doesn't mean you can't cross, but you can't cross for harm. You see that? So it's not saying you can't come this way. You can't come this way to hurt me. Pass. You can come up to this rock and want to hurt me. You just can't go past it and want to hurt me. Okay? It's kind of funny, but that's the idea. We've made an agreement. When you see the rock, time to chill out. You're not coming to hurt me, and I'm not coming to hurt you. And like Jacob is worried that he's going to go get Laban. That isn't the case. But probably his posterity as well. Okay, he's making an agreement for his family, not just Jacob. And probably Laban and not just Laban's family, and not just Laban either. Verse 53, the God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, and the God of their father judge between us. And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Isn't that interesting? We talked about the fear of the Lord, but he called God, the fear of his father Isaac, and if you will, the fear, the one focus of his father, the one whom governed his father's footsteps, the fear of his father Isaac. So Laban was an ecumenist. And Jacob said, nope, just my own God, thank you. Just the true God. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his brethren to eat bread. So kind of a sacrificial meal, it sounds like again. And they ate bread and stayed all night on the mountain. So they made the covenant. They sealed the deal here. And again, I think it's fair to say, even by what Laban said, that if it wasn't for God intervening, Jacob would either have been killed or sent away with nothing. And Laban would have taken everything back. Laban didn't argue, I wouldn't have done that. Right? There was no response to suggest otherwise. Okay, so God, the bottom line is God protected. God blessed Jacob. God called Jacob back to the promised land, and God protected Jacob from Laban. And then, number 15, Laban departs. Laban packs up and goes home. By the way, with less than he thought he would be taking on the trip. But it says, and early in the morning, Laban rose and kissed his sons and daughters and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned to his place. So there's 55 verses. That's a lot of Bible. But again, God blesses Jacob in the latter, sets him up to be blessed in chapter 30, the latter part of chapter 30. And then we see the evidence of that blessing in 31, but also the fact that because Jacob was blessed, I have a hard time saying Laban and Jacob, as you've noticed, but Laban's sons were jealous, and Laban was upset, obviously, at Jacob because Jacob's wealth grew and Laban shrunk. And it was Laban that it sounds like, as you look at what Jacob rebuked Laban over, Laban kept changing the rules, and God kept saying, okay, striped it is, spotted it is, whatever it is, that'll be what it is. Okay? So even though they made the deal in the last chapter, Laban kept changing it over and over again. And yet God continued to bless Jacob no matter what Laban changed the wages to be. And by the way, that would have been a unilateral change then, right? It would have been Jacob or Laban changing it without Jacob agreeing to it, it sounds like. And then Jacob had to pay any losses stolen or destroyed and all of that, plus did all the work. And God still blessed everything that Jacob did. So, questions or comments? Yeah, at this point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course, Damascus was in existence at this time.
It was east of there, though. It would have been farther over, I would think. So.
But they identified him as Assyrian, and I was just looking on the map. That's very much in the same area, proximity of where Syria and that country is right today. So the Syrians and Israel are definitely having problems, like Jacob and Esau had problems.
Yeah, yeah. What if that rock's still standing?
They probably used it for target practice.
Yeah. So. Anyway, it's interesting. You go each step of the way. Jacob works for Laban. Jacob flees from Laban. Like you would have almost expected it if you didn't know the story. Right? It kind of sets you up in the previous chapter that Jacob makes a deal that he can't be cheated, and yet Laban tries to cheat him. And in 6 years, God basically flipped the wealth over onto Jacob. And it was rightfully his. Sounds like so. And then God calls him back into the promised land.
I just wonder what Laban was thinking. Here he had all these prosperity gods in his house, and here this...
Yeah, why would you want the idols anyway?
Yeah, I didn't...
Obviously, sense. You haven't kept them shiny enough or something. By the way, those will come up again. once. Because Jacob finds out, so he has to do something with him. So we'll see that. Mm-hmm. He's acknowledging. Remember, he was making a deal with God initially. If you do this, I'll give you a tenth. It's like, well, you're so generous, Jacob. You're such a cheese wad. But you know, and then God's like, "What? What? You're gonna give me what? You know, really? You're trying to bargain with me?" So. But he seems to, in 20 years, Jacob has grown a lot, partly because he's eaten a lot of his own actions, right? He's had to deal with someone worse than he is. And I think he's come out ahead in a spiritual sense this way, okay? So he still has some big things ahead of him, though. Well, one hairy thing ahead of him, anyway, that he is scared to death of yet. So next week, no Sunday school, 10 o'clock service. Remember that. So, okay. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you for Jacob and how you worked in his life. And Lord, thank you that we have the wonderful blessing of learning without having to make mistakes. That doesn't mean we don't make them, but Lord, it's sure nice to learn from somebody else's sins and choices when we have the chance to do so. And we just thank you that you've taught us more today. Help us to, Lord, just to meditate on your word and put it to practice. We pray in Jesus' name, amen.